part of the last session today, of course, of the PAC meeting, and we'll have three scientific reports. The first on the study of vorticity and hyperon polarization in nuclear collisions with the Nika energy range by Vyacheslav Taneyev. We have 17, 16 seconds.
Really, it is not the first talk about Nika program, but previously we were talking concerning strong interaction. So we discussed possibility of phase transition, density reached in these collisions, so high temperature and so on. But now we turn to the peripheral collisions. I would like to say that at high energy collisions, the initial angular momentum can be very, very large, as you see here. As you see here. But the initial state of form hydrodynamical stage collision of shear flow pattern can be formed, and it is illustrated in this figure. This pattern may turn and really rotate. Another similar case, it is Kelvin-Helmholtz instability, which can be formed in this case. It is another example of Kelvin-Helmholtz instability. What is needed? It is very low viscosity, and due to small difference of velocities, such system can be formed, and this is occur in the reaction plane. Similarly, such instability can be formed in air, and all that is observable in nature, but unfortunately there is no similar example, say, in nuclear physics. Other kind of instability, such things, is this formation of its formation of, say, such processes. What are going to discuss here? It is discuss this kind of effects, and I'm going to do that in terms of Parton-Hadron sink model. And this model is well suited for this energy range, Nika energy range, and I shall consider in more detail the interaction of 7.7 GeV per nucleon square root of S, and because at this energy even there is some experimental measurements. One point which is not discussed previously, but it is included here in the code, it is just the simulation of chiral symmetry in hadronic phase. I think you remember that a few years ago there was much discussion as to peak absorbed GeV for strange particles ratio. It is shown here, this experimental points. Previously it was a few points only, now it's the curve is seen quite clearly. And what's shown here is the result of Parton hadron string dynamic with chiral symmetry effect, the solid line, and dotted line without that. Till recent time, really, it was not explained, but people only refer to the phase transition, but there was no calculation. Now the model is working at that, and you see similar experiment with the same notations, but the blue curve, it is the purely hadronic matter, and it cannot describe that. But as to Parton hadron string dynamic model, it can be used in this case. I would like to introduce definition. As to classical vorticity, it is shown here in simply rotor velocity. Relativistic kinematic vorticity is defined in this way. The component velocity is written here. And it is relativistic terminal velocity is used. The difference with that velocity is divided by temperature. So in this case, relativistic terminal vorticity depends on the temperature. And another point, that this became dimensionless. And we largely will use that. Pardon. We should fluidize this description, and due to that, the velocity is described. Surely we should use some average velocity. And as you see, additional averaging function phi is introduced here, and due to that, we can smooth distribution since kinetic model give us only some points at both in x and momentum space. But now we smooth this distribution and it allows us to using this function, Smerlin function, continuous interpolation between points, and also calculate derivative, because as you see, they come into definition. The function is approximated in the simplest way as quadratic function, And due to that, it's possible rather fast calculate that. I would like to illustrate here equation of state, which we used. It is averaged equation of state using the procedure I mentioned before. So it is different time, 2, 4, 8, 12, in the same way here. It is for baryon number, it is for energy density, and it is for temperature. This initial collision, it's to Fermi, it is the time when centers of colliding nuclei are approaching mostly closely. Then start expansion, and at some moment it may be decoupled, so we can calculate with assuming that it's possible to describe that not only kinetic, but in hybrid model relating that with hydrodynamics. And it turns out that at time about 10 Fermi over C, the system in average, because it should be done for every events, but in average it is 10 Fermi over C, then system start to freeze out. Pardon. energy density is shown here. It looks in the same way as proton. But as to temperature, we have no temperature in our model. So due to that, we calculate that additionally. So fixing some cell and treating energy momentum and baryon density conservation, we can calculate say temperature. Temperature is shown here, and general evolution formula looks like that, but temperature are rather high, as you can see. As to kinetic thermal vorticity, that is kinetic vorticity. It's evolved with lots of fluctuations, but really all these figures are cut on the energy density shown here. Now we look at the say at this distribution and see that the boundary I've seen here much better. It is because the temperature vorticity is used here. Temperature vorticity has gradients, and in addition, at the boundary, the temperature is getting small, but it's getting small. This velocity is getting large, and it is seen here. XZ and TZ, it is really situation along the evolution, but as to say YX, it is shown here. The calculated abundance of strange particles calculated in this, not in the usual Parton Hadron model, but with the model where they are included coral conservation. You see that with coral conservation, the multiplicity of strange particles are larger than without that, and larger by by roughly factor about two. It is, but influence is not so much, but as to antiparticles, abundance getting by two orders of magnitude smaller. It is, as an example, it is what's shown distribution along the colliding axis for different times, 5, 10, 15, 20. Note that really freeze out is something there. So it is has no much meaning. And you see distribution getting symmetric one. But antiparticles has small multiplicity, small statistics, and the practically only fluctuation of that. Polarization. We can calculate average spin vector in this way, in the first order of omega. So we see simultaneously both spin S and this function omega, with which we are working. The formula is obtained in the conditions close to thermal equilibrium. Using this relation, we can transform mean multiplicity to polarization. But note, it is vector at point X and P. So in order to get total yield, we should summarize this expression over momentum and R space. I was talking about direct production of strange particles, but there are resonances which decay again. The main resonances are radiating, strong decays, these two. And we should, and also two-step or multi-step decays with production of lambdas. All that may be used, and if we collect that, we now can calculate the polarization. But it is not my calculations. It is experimental results which simulate this study, and it is polarization as a function of energy calculated for gold on gold peripheral collisions, centrality shown here. What is shown by a red line, red curves, red points, it is just for anti-lambda, and stars are for lambdas. You see the following here. The anti-hyperons are above the hyperons. And another point, the energy 7 GeV predicts measurements at this energy essentially higher than far. The general trend is that polarization goes down with energy. It is the same what is here, but what is plotted here is a calculations of hyperons, lambda hyperons, and anti-lambda hyperons, and you practically not see the difference between them. But nevertheless, for anti-lambda, this model predicts smaller number of antiparticles. But now looks at our results. It is again decreasing curve, but it is not energy. It is time. It is calculated for the colliding energy 7.7 GeV and peripheral collisions estimated as impact parameters 7.5. What we see here? First, it is measured point, and they plotted just as the freeze-out time. I noted that result start it's average freeze-out because particles are added at different points at different times. But average freeze-out is just at 10 Fermi over C, and S2 hyperons, it is not so bad. It is quite well, but certainly there is no agreement with anti-hyperons, which are too large. As to calculations, anti-hyperons are shown here by green dotted lines, but we stopped it here because a number of hyperons in calculations is about 7,000, but anti-hyperons lost two orders of magnitude. So at time above 15 MeV per C, error bars are very large, and they are not plotted here. So there are some questions to that. First is to experiment. I mentioned not once that energy 7.7 is exceptional one, and it should be checked. And NICA experiments will be of great interest, but who knows when results will be. But nevertheless, NICA measurements are very needed in this point. The question which has no answer, why is the polarization of production of polarized anti-lambda hyperons higher than that for lambda? Similar results are obtained by other people, but really there is no explanation for that. It is of interest to consider electromagnetic field, but unfortunately we are not yet ready for such study. It is very important to find some properties which could characterize this study. But unfortunately, there are no such signs. And the only point which I find, it is just transverse momentum distribution in the transverse plane. But you see some structure. it is projections of the reaction plane. So if it go from reaction plane to first octant, it will be one, it will be positive, but in that sense negative, again positive, again negative. So it's a specific future, but really it is not yet checked. On this I can complete discussion. Thank you for attention.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Yes.
Sorry for a question. What is the spin of a Gaperon? What is the spin? What is the value of spin?
One half. But really, other particles are also included. Say, some of hyperons, 3.2. And that's important because the yield is increased. Really, we calculate.
Next, please. Next. Okay. I don't understand why you can calculate the signal of polarization.
Lambda is measured safely due to that.
Green but is a green. Sorry. Green line is theoretical or experimental?
Theoretical.
Theoretical. I can't understand why you can estimate the signal in theoretical. What is the line, basic line for?
Really, we have the table for different resonances. And,
okay, maybe. Okay, thank you.
Please. To the huge difference between polarization of hyperons and anti-hyperons. Is it essential experimentally to perform the measurements in collider mode, like Nico will do, or the fixed target experiments at CBM FAIR are also possible?
Really, I can't to say that. I don't know what will be difference, but it would be of interest to look, but the first point, we don't know really the experimental results, it's our Nico energy. The difference by six time, it is unbelievable.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for the talk again. And the next report will be on the application of multinucleon transfer reactions to the synthesis of neutron-rich nuclei. Alexander Karpov.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. So my talk, title of the talk is application of multinucleon transfer reactions to synthesis of neutron-rich nuclei. And particular region of our interest will be two regions of nuclear map. One is around closed neutron shell 126, and the second one will be concerning super heavies, but first of all about this. This region of nuclear map is interesting in particular for because of astrophysical applications. This closed shell nuclei forms so-called waiting points on the for the air process of nuclear synthesis, and I should say that the least studied region is exactly neutron number 126, and at the moment only one method is applied for production of such nuclei, that is fragmentation reactions. Using this method, the most neutron-rich nucleus, which was produced with this neutron number, this osmium-202, and it was produced with a cross-section just 4.4 picobarn. And we know that the cross-section drops down quite quickly when we move away from the region of beta stability. So this method has obvious limitation because of the production rates. So other methods are of great value, and one of this method, which is now actively studied both experimentally and theoretically, it is multinucleon transfer reaction. When you have a low energy collision of two nuclei and you transfer nucleons from one of the reaction partner to another one. Okay, the model which we use for analysis of such reactions, that is semi-classical dynamical model. So we consider process of the collision as evolution of in time of certain most important degrees of freedom of nuclear system. In particular, in our model, we have 8 degrees of freedom, that is relative distance between nuclei, two deformations, mass asymmetry, charge asymmetry, and three angles of mutual orientations of this nuclei. Then we should have the potential energy, which is also quite complicated, and it should depend on all these degrees of freedom, which I showed before. And then we write down the system of equations. In our case, it is a system of Langevin equations. So that is 8 degrees of freedom, so 8 equations for collective coordinates and 8 equations for conjugate momenta. So this equation have three forces. That is driving force, which is mainly determined by the potential energy, that is dissipation force, and random force, which simulates a fluctuation of collective coordinates. In more explicit form, this equations looks like this. So this is all 16 equations. The method of the calculation is the following. So we start modeling from configuration of two nuclei which approach each other, and distance between two nuclei is approximately 50 Fermi. So there's nothing except Coulomb field between two nuclei. Then we start solving of this system. Nuclei approach each other, and when they reach the region of contact, energy dissipation is started, and also fluctuations in all the collective coordinates. Then we simulate a number of these trajectories. The bigger the number, the better. So statistic is important. We also change the impact parameter. And then if we want to compare this experiment, we should... I didn't say that we stop calculations when final fragments are formed and again reseparated up to the distance of approximately 50 Fermi. And for each trajectory, for each such event, we know all details. We know charges and mass numbers of the fragments. Both primary fragments excited one, and also if we consider the excitation of these fragments, we know also characteristics of the final fragments. We know angles of reseparation, we know kinetic energy, time, and so on and so forth. Now if we compare with experiments, so we should limit all these accumulated events with respect to experimental conditions, certain angular range, energy ranges, and so on, and then cross-section is calculated in quite a simple way. We simply integrate all events over impact parameter. Just a couple of examples of comparison with experimental data, that is xenon and lead system. It's one of the systems which is considered as most appropriate for synthesis of nuclei around neutron number 126. And here you see experimental data which was obtained by Kazulin group and at the Fleurov laboratory. and calculations. That is for energy distributions, photo energies, mass distributions, angular distribution of light reaction product, and angular distribution for heavy reaction product. So I would just want to say that the agreement with experiment is rather reasonable. And second, what I want to show that we also may calculate characteristics of the de-excited fragments, so-called final fragments. An example of such calculations is shown here. Another type of comparison was made for xenon and platinum systems. That is the second reaction, which is also considered as a possible reaction for production of this N126 nuclei. And here what is shown, that is experimental data versus calculations for production of different isotopes of projectile like nuclei, that is elements lighter than initial xenon and elements heavier than initial xenon. Again, the agreement with experiment is quite reasonable. So what we may conclude about possibility of production in such reactions, nuclei around neutron number 126. Here you see comparison of calculated cross-section for production of this of osmium isotopes as a function of mass number in multinucleon transfer reactions for this reaction. And in comparison with experimental cross-section for fragmentation reactions, that is for fragmentation of lead-208, and that is for fragmentation of uranium-238. That is nucleus which I mentioned in the beginning, osmium-202, which was produced with cross-section about 4 picobar. And you see that if we compare in cross-section, which appears in multinucleon transfer reactions and in fragmentation reactions. So difference for this particular nucleus is 7 orders of magnitude. So that is a huge difference. And even if in fragmentation reactions you can use a thicker target, anyhow, multinucleon transfer reactions have a big advantage with respect to the fragmentation process. I mentioned that at the moment two systems are considered as the most perspective for production of this N126 nuclei, that is xenon and platinum and xenon and lead. And again, if we make the calculation, so we see that neutron rich nuclei, that is this left part of the picture, then xenon and platinum system is better in terms of the cross-section than the second one. Quite interesting observation was made for angular distribution of reaction products, neutron-rich reaction products, and the conclusion was that angular distribution is very sensitive to collision energy. When we come to very close to the Coulomb barrier energy, like in this case, so the angular distribution is not exactly uniform, but more or less uniform up to forward angles and drop down quite quickly when we reach a grazing angle. But when energy is increased, cross-section, angular distribution becomes more and more sharp and peaked around grazing angle. Particular here for this energy, that is a very sharp distribution for production of, I believe, iridium-203. Opposite to this, second interesting conclusion from the calculation was made about energy dependence of the production cross-section. And here we observed that in calculations, cross-section is quite weakly dependent on the collision energy. This error bars, that is not experimental error bars, that is theoretical error bars appearing because of the statistics accumulated in calculations. Well, and now if we look what kind of nuclei we may produce in this single collision of the xenon and platinum, so it's shown here. So here our region of interest, and you see that this cross section higher than 100 nanobar, that is last contour line. We may synthesize quite a number of unknown nuclei in this region, and also with much higher cross section we may synthesize nuclei already known but absolutely unstudied. So they were just detected. I mean, last two, three nuclei in this region, they were detected in fragmentation of uranium, but not studied at all. So in for this purpose, we also may use multinucleon transfer reactions. Okay, now about the second topic, that is possibility of production of heaviest nuclei, in particular super heavy, but not only. And then for this case, the idea is to use a collision of actinides, say use uranium as a beam, and another actinide like uranium, curium, or heavier as a target. And again, idea was that in such collisions, say uranium and curium, we may transfer nucleons, for example, from uranium to curium, and shell effects, which are quite important in nuclear reactions, may increase the probability for production of lead, double magic lead, as one of the nucleus. And in this case, super heavy nucleus element 106 as another one. They are, of course, excited, and the excitation process will took away the largest part of the cross section, but still there can be some probability for producing even super heavy nuclei. And what is particularly important, that this super heavy nuclei should be neutron rich nuclei, which can be cannot be synthesized in using fusion reactions. Okay, as I said, potential energy plays a key role in such reactions, and therefore I want to show how the potential energy looks like, and what is difference from the previously considered reactions like xenon and lead, for example. Then that reactions was reactions between spherical nuclei and ground state, and actinides are deformed in ground state, so orientational effects should be also quite important. And here I show you how looks like the potential energy for tip-to-tip orientation. For example, that is uranium and steinium. You see very deep well for actinide region, and then there's a quite sharp increase of the potential, and it looks like not very optimistic. But for side-to-side collision, potential energy changes very much, and in this case, opposite, you see very deep wells, one corresponding, but basically both corresponding to the production of magic lead 208 and the complementary fragment. So it means that for before considering collisions of actinides, we should try to study this new feature, I mean the orientational effects in nuclear collisions. For this, we did the calculations for not for actinides, but for middle mass nuclei, that is gadolinium and tungsten. Both nuclei are also deformed, and here you see energy distribution, mass distribution, and angular distribution for different orientations. They are shown here by different colors, and this energy corresponds to the barrier value. So, for example, for this energy, this side-to-side orientation, that is below the barrier, so you see very narrow mass distribution, almost no energy dissipation, and there's no production of heavier fragments. Here's mass more than 200. When you increase energy, so the cross section for distributions for different orientations becomes closer to each other, and if you further increase the energy, that is in particular 10 MeV per nucleon, So all these distributions overlap and becomes almost indistinguishable. So conclusion that orientational effects are really important, but importance of these effects very much dependent on the collision energy. And for higher energy, these effects gradually disappears. Recently, it was two series of experiments just for studying of this combination. And this both experiments were done at the Fleurov laboratory, and they cover this angular regions, which is shown here. And comparison to experiment is shown here, again, that is different orientations, but with sick curve, I show you averaged over different angles, distributions in comparison with experiment. That is, again, energy distribution. Yes, energy distribution for big, large mass transfers, that is mass distribution, angular distribution. Agreement, okay, that is not perfect, but at least reasonable. Agreement with experiment. So now, with such information, we may go to the collisions of actinides. And first, what I want to show, that is primary cross-section for primary reaction products. So here is shown as example uranium on curium system, production of nuclei from berkelium to borium. You see that cross-section is quite high, and it decreased, but not dramatically. And I can say that even for center of island of stability, excited nucleus, we may produce with the cross-section, say, 1000 nanobar in calculations. But the problem is that they will be highly excited. When we consider the excitation process, we have a picture like this. So not so much of products survive against fission. And that is experimental data in comparison with experiment. Curves are not very smooth, again, because of statistics accumulated in calculations. I should say that agreement with experiment is, again, reasonable. And we see that above picobarn level, we have only isotopes of element 103, lawrencium, and not more. Also, what is not very well seen in this case, there's a certain influence of shell effects, which is appeared as a shoulder in this distribution. It's not very clearly seen, but believe me, it exists. Okay, so next what we looked for, it was a change of target, which is curium in this case, to another types of target. First, what we looked at was uranium and uranium system, and actually that is the second experimentally studied system, and in 70s and 80s. Here, again, I should say that situation, if we speak about production of heaviest nuclei, becomes even worse. So above picobarn cross-section, we have only fermium isotopes and not more. And this shell effects, which were not very clearly seen, but they were seen in the previous case, they almost disappear in uranium case. So the obvious conclusion that we should take is the heaviest available target. Because for such experiments, we don't need a very big amount of material, I believe, that einsteinium 254 that is feasible and can be used for such experiments. And I know that such example even exists of using this target for such type of experiments. And if we do calculations for that is uranium and einsteinium, that was misprint. So that is only calculations, and here you see that first of all distributions become have a much slower decrease of the cross section to the in the direction of neutron richness. That is an obvious indication of the importance of shell effects, both in production of these nuclei and also in surviving of reaction products. Cross sections increase, and if we again make a limit of 1 picobarn, so we may produce nuclei up to mid-nerium, so at element 109. With these arrows, you see the most neutron-rich isotope for each element known yet. So even if we will not succeed to go to the region of very heavy nuclei, this method is very optimistic and very could be very productive if we speak about synthesis and study of neutron-rich nuclei, for example, for heavy actinides, like fermium isotopes or mendelevium, novellium, and so on. Okay, conclusions. For production of neutron-rich nuclei in collisions, in multinucleon transfer reactions, first conclusion that is about neutron number 126. So cross sections are quite high, and even with cross section of 100 nanobarn and more, we can produce a number of unknown nuclei and study already known nuclei, but very badly studied. Second conclusion was about importance of orientational effects when we consider collisions of deformed nuclei in the ground state. And third conclusion is about collisions of actinides is a method for producing of neutron-rich heavy and super-heavy nuclei. So here we should, first conclusion that we should use as heaviest as possible target, curium, californium, or who knows, maybe einsteinium, and strong shell effects in production cross-section and in survival probability may give a possibility to synthesize such neutron-rich nuclei. And of course, many of the conclusions which I showed, they are based on the calculations, and we still don't have many experimental data for such type of reaction, so additional experimental data on reaction dynamics in particular is of great importance. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Alexander. This talk full of perspectives.
In experiment that we cannot prepare by hand orientation, yes?
Yes.
Yes. So
sometimes it's possible, I know.
Okay. Thank you. Same.
Yes, polarized target can be produced in some cases. I know that there are some crystal effects which allow you to. But okay.
Christian.
Your calculation with the Langevin equations to be solved is rather complicated, and you have done a very terrific job to analyze some data from the Flerov group. But my question is, did you compare with the other models of multinucleon transfer reactions that is available in Italy from the Torino group? The code is called grazing. Do they arrive also to a reasonable job to compare with the data?
Okay, it is, if you ask about grazing model, so from the title it's clear that this model was developed for peripheral collisions, for grazing collisions. It can be applied for such type of reactions, and from very detailed comparison with experiment, we know that agreement of this model with experiment is very good. If we speak about, say, few neutron or one proton, two proton transfer. If you speak about multinucleon transfer reactions, so disagreement is systematic with experiment.
Yeah, I can add that we made this comparison for one of the proposals recently at Ganile also between two codes and for the pickup reactions. This is amazingly, the grazing is completely wrong. Yeah, this model is really doing very good job. But I have a question. Can you remind what's about the parameters? How many parameters are in the model, and how they are adjusted to understand what are the degrees of freedom which you have?
Okay. So of course there are parameters. There are quite a number of parameters. First of all, that is parameters for dissipation form factors. But I should say that all of these parameters were fitted. In the beginning for adjusted to a single experiment that was xenon Wismus for single energy, and from those times that they were not changed. So then we performed calculations for many nuclear systems without variation of any parameter of the model. So okay, for a particular system, we can still tune parameters and get better agreement with the data, but we do not do this. We are not going to do this just because in this case, we cannot control results which we predict. And we cannot be sure that what we predict has some reasonable values.
I guess that you need masses also, so...
You mean inertia parameters?
No, the masses of the
nuclear masses.
Yeah.
For so survival probability, yes. And there even maybe not masses, but shell corrections. They're very important for this actinide reactions because shell effects determine value of the fission barrier and competition of the fission with neutron evaporation. Mm-hmm. For particle evaporation, for not fissile nuclei, binding energy of neutrons are more or less in agreement between different models.
Very nice work. We discuss often about this, but you show a very interesting comparison. It's somehow a new picture for me of the rate for production of osmium for the two reactions. Xenon plus lead, xenon plus platinum, okay, and it shows very clearly. That's it. That this the xenon plus lead is much more, more productive than the other reaction, right?
If I xenon lead, you mean in this region?
Yeah, in this region. So
but, we speak about neutron-rich nuclei, so they are here.
Yes, exactly. Now, the point, what is the reason for this large difference? Is it due to the fact that some properties of is connected to dynamics, is connected to the fact that xenon plus lead is...
that is lead. Yeah, so you can, of course, we can produce with large cross-section lead from lead. Yeah, that is simply elastic scattering. I mean, xenon on lead, you have a maximum of the cross-section for lead 208. And then you have decrease of the cross-section in both directions. For xenon and platinum, so platinum has a neutron number which is different from 126. So that is the reason. Yeah.
Mainly probably of the fact that you have a double magic target.
Yes, and that target has neutron number 126. And we are looking just for this nuclei.
Okay, thank you very much again. And we have the last report on the neutron activation analysis of arsenic and mercury content in human remains. of the 16th, 17th centuries from the Moscow Kremlin necropolis. It's already intriguing, the title. I hope it was not found in old bodies, too much, at least. So we are waiting for your report. Please.
Thank you. Good evening, dear colleagues. My report is dedicated to the results of neutron activation analysis of human remains of 16th, 17th centuries from the Moscow Kremlin. At first, I would like to say a few words about development of collaboration between physicists, historians, and archaeologists. In 2015, the Nasledia Moscow Regional Foundation transferred us 10 fragments of glass bracelets pre-Mongol period found in the Dubna settlement. You can see it here. We determined the elemental composition of fragments and found out that all 10 bracelets were produced in the old Russian workshops, while in other settlements, Byzantine bracelets can be often seen. Half of the bronze bracelets were made in Kiev or Novgorod, and the rest in provincial workshops. The results of this work were published in the Particle and Nuclear Letters journal. A year ago, we turned to the leading researcher of the Moscow Kremlin Museums, the Doctor of History Tatiana Dmitrievna Panova, with the offer of collaboration. In February 2017, Tatiana Dmitrievna provided us 3 samples of the remains of high-ranking historical figures of 16th and 17th centuries for the study. We hadn't known the names of those persons until the finishing of the experiments. Dear colleagues, today we have the opportunity to see the unique historical photos. I would like to thank our co-author Tatiana Dmitrievna Panova, who provided these photos. The death circumstances of some people from medieval are still in dispute. Historians suggest that some of them could die due to the poisoning. The main objective of our study was to confirm or to refute these assumptions. First of all, it was necessary to determine the presence and mass fraction of mercury and arsenic in the obtained samples. After finishing the experiment, the names have been disclosed. The sample number 1 is the rib from the burial place of the son of Tsar Ivan the Terrible, Tsarevich Ivan Ivanovich, who died in 1581. The sample number 2 is the rib from the burial of Prince Mikhail Vasilievich Skopin-Shuisky, who died in 1610. Skopin-Shuisky was the outstanding military leader already in young age. In the beginning of the 17th century, he defeated the troops of Lzhdmitry II, the Polish troops, and lifted the siege of the Trinity Lavra of St. Sergius. Then he came to unblock Moscow. And the sample number 3 consists of few strands of hair of Anastasia Romanovna, the first wife of Tsar Ivan the Terrible, the first Russian Tsarina, who died in 1560. In February, April, the samples were studied by neutron activation analysis. We carried out 2 independent experiments using 2 our basic facilities, the REN resonance neutron source and the IBR2 reactor. Preparation of burn samples and hair elements required different approaches. The bone samples were carefully piped several times with the cotton wool soaked in different cleaning solutions, at first in distilled water, then in sodium bicarbonate solution. And finally, the bones were flushed with a large amount of distilled water and wiped using alcohol. After cleaning, ends of the ribs were removed because they could absorb a certain amount of cleaning solution and contaminations. Then bone samples were dried, milled, and dried again to constant weight. Hair was washed in acetone and dried. In addition to the samples, standard materials, the elemental composition of which is known and certified, had been irradiated at both facilities. We used the standards from the National Institute of Standards and Technology from the USA. Masses of standards at samples for irradiation at the RAND facility were approximately 1 gram. Weighted samples were packed in plastic bags. Each packed sample was placed in its individual plastic container. It doesn't work, sorry. The containers were placed on a special substrate. You can see it on the slide. Made of aluminum foil. The substrate was put directly on the moderator of the RAND facility. Now, our facility is under reconstruction. After the reconstruction is finished, we plan to begin installation, adjustment, and operation of an automation pneumatic system for irradiation created in Bulgaria, especially for the RAN. Masses of standards and samples for irradiation at the IBR2 reactor were about 0.1 gram. Weighted samples were packed in aluminum capsules, and all capsules were placed in one aluminum container. For weighing, we used a hardware-software tool for automation of registration of sample weights created in our laboratory. Samples and standards were irradiated about 5 days at the RAN facility and 2 weeks at the third channel of the IBR2 reactor. After irradiation, the gamma spectra of induced activity of samples were measured twice using the automation system of measurement of spectra created in our laboratory. This system includes a high-purity germanium detector with high-resolution electronics, sample changer, and software. The first three such systems were created in collaboration with Sergei Pavlov and Ilya Chepurchenko for research at the IBR2 reactor. The fourth system was created for research at the RAN facility. Now we are creating the fifth system for our colleagues in Institute of Nuclear Physics in Almaty, Kazakhstan. The first measurement of spectra of our samples was carried out a few hours after the finishing of irradiation at the RAND facility and several days after irradiation at the IBR2 reactor, taking into account the radiation situation. The second measurement was carried out about 3 weeks after the finishing of irradiation. We used the Genie 2000 software for measurement and analysis of the spectra. Calculation of mass fraction of elements has been done by two methods. The relative, using the standards, the elemental composition of which is well known and certified, and the absolute one, based on the equation of activation. The concentration software was used, created in our laboratory, was used to calculate the mass fraction of elements by relative method. This software is successfully used more than 7 years in our laboratory. 2 years ago, we received a formal request to license this software for using in the Institute of Nuclear Physics in Almaty. And last year, we transferred this software to our colleagues. Now you see the graves of Tsarevich Ivan left and Tsar Fyodor right after their remains were removed for study. Photo dates 1863. Thus, they carried out two experiments with our samples. In these experiments, we used two facilities for radiation, IREN, in the IBR2 reactor. Two sets of spectra of induced activity for each sample were measured for after irradiation, and the obtained data were used to calculate the mass fraction of elements by two methods, relative and absolute. These calculations were performed by three authors independently, and they think that the enumerated action have effectively ensured the quality of analytical studies. For calculation by absolute method, the equation of activation and following values shown on this slide were used. The results of calculation are summarized in the tables 1 and 3. Mass fraction of arsenic and mercury in scalp hair and rib bones of modern humans you can see in the table 2. Particular attention should be drawn to high concentration of mercury in bones. You can see it on the slide. For comparison, in bones of modern not poisoned humans, mercury content are from 0 to thousands, hundreds of ppm. Strong excess of mercury has been found in hair. Hundreds tens of ppm in hair of healthy people nowadays. We found slight excess of arsenic in bones. For comparison, less than 1/10 of ppm in bones of modern not poisoned humans. And strong excess of arsenic in hair. Up to hundreds of ppm in hair of healthier modern people. Besides, we found the excess of concentration in gold of hair. Also, we found slight excess of also, we find a very strong excess of silver concentration in hair. You can see it here. Also, there is a strong excess of antimony concentration in hair. Archangel Cathedral is now on the photo, the burial place of the Russian Tsars, built in the 1508. The photo dates 1960s. As a result of the qualitative analysis, the presence of mercury and arsenic was established in all fragments of remains from the burial places of the Moscow Kremlin. The quantitative analysis of the presence of mercury fully confirmed the acute poisoning of the first Russian Tsarina Anastasia, as the mercury content in her hair is extremely high. The young woman, she died at the age of about 27, couldn't accumulate such quantity of harmful substance using medieval cosmetics and medicines. The remains of Tsarevich Ivan are on the photo. The opening of the grave was in 1963. The increased content of mercury was detected in the bone remains of Tsarevich Ivan and Prince Mikhail. That correlates with the results of chemical analysis of materials from their burials in 1964. However, the reasons of the admission of mercury into the organisms of these young people were different, as well as the reasons of their death. Here you see the tombstones over the graves of Ivan the Terrible and his sons in the process of dismantling in 1963. Tsarevich Ivan died at the age of 27 from the trauma. However, it is also known that for many years he was treated for syphilis with mercury ointments. Therefore, by the time of his death, he formed the chronic poisoning of the body with this harmful element. They can assume, if it hadn't happened, death from the injury, sometime later he would die from the poisoning. Here are the remains of Skopin-Shuisky in the grave. The photo has been taken in 1963. Prince Mikhail Skopin-Shuisky died suddenly at the age of about 23. He was a healthy man, well-trained warrior. Contemporaries explained his death by poisoning. Signs of poisoning were showed up suddenly at the feast. They can assume that in this case, it was used the combined composition of the poison, mercury and arsenic. On the photo, tombs of Tsar Ivan the Terrible left and his sons, Tsar Fyodor right and Tsarevich Ivan in the Archangel Cathedral. The obtained results of neutron activation analysis give us the opportunity to introduce into scientific circulation more accurate values of the content of mercury in arsenic and samples from the burial places of Russian historical figures of the second half of 16th, early 17th century. Besides, we have concluded that the basic facilities of the Frank Laboratory, the IREN and the IBR2 can be successfully used for the analysis of archaeological samples. Now about plans for the future. We are going to continue our collaboration with the Moscow Kremlin Museums. Also, we start to interact with the Institute of Archaeology, Russian Academy of Sciences. We received about 30 medieval ceramic samples from the Institute of Archaeology to determine elemental composition. Archaeological glass and alloys have been well studied, but the ceramic is a very large and understudied theme. To conclude, I would like to thank employees of the IREN Research Facility, Chief Engineer Vladimir Pitaev, employees of the third channel of the IBR2 reactor, Team Leader Maxim Bulavin, for cooperation, as well as Tatiana Ostravnaya and Sergey Pavlov for consultation and spectra analysis. If anyone is interested in our research, please ask me, we are ready to provide you with preprints of our works. Unfortunately, our co-author Tatiana Dmitrievna Panova couldn't be in Dubna today because of health problems, but she asked me to thank the employees and the head of the Frank Laboratory, Швецов Валерий Николаевич, personally for the opportunity to investigate such important archaeological samples. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much for the presentation. It was really very interesting up to the last moment. So, are there any questions? Yes, please.
Extremely interesting talk, so thank you very much. How it will be published or how to be presented?
We have published our work in particle in Nucleus Letter Journal.
In our physical journal?
Yes.
Maybe it deserves maybe more spreading this information.
For curiosity, I have one question. In principle, the samples of the three samples, they should be compared to the other samples from more or less the same period in the history, as of course the conditions were completely different that time and today, that I think the people didn't take really the showers too often at that time, and also they didn't clean the dishes too often. So I think that excess of tin and gold and silver probably can be explained in many ways. But I think really to show that this excess of arsenic, probably you should compare with many other samples from the same period.
I guess you mean crowns on the heat of...
But yeah, they touch metals all the time without, you know, cleaning the hands. So that's normal that they... And they also eat on the dishes which were made of tin, for example. Mm-hmm. So that's easy to explain why they had the excess of metals in the body with respect to the, of course, the bodies today. So, yeah, and my question is if this was compared to the samples from the same period, really to show that this excess of arsenic or something else. Mm?
I know that a hair sample was studied by other methods, and we received this sample just to see that we can make right, correct results. And we our value of mercury and hair is the same as for another method. No, we don't investigate other samples from medieval.
I don't see any other questions, so let's thank you and all our speakers of today. So I have bad news for the members of the committee. We have to stay here and to discuss before enjoying the dinner. Yes, more or less a half an hour, yeah, of the discussion of the different topics. It's no break. So, yeah. So, yeah, just the members of the committee will stay in this room, please. Yeah.